Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 192 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. It's going to be an action-packed one. There's tons of stuff to go through. I'm not going to go over all the things we're going to talk about, but we're going to bring Tracy Wilson on fairly quickly. But the other thing I did want to mention is we're going to have an interview with Chris Scott, who is the president of the Penticton Shooting Sports Association, which is a range up in Penticton, British Columbia. And the federal government, it's on federal government lease land, and the government has decided, the Ministry of Agriculture, I think, has decided to dispose of those two lease lots where the club is, not the rest that they're using, but these two lease lots. Apparently, they're just surplus land that they, you know, want to dispose of, which means the club has to be out by the end of this year. They've been there 40 years. So interesting, something funny is going on there. So that's kind of interesting. So we're going to show you that interview. Anyway, all that and more, the CCFR Radio Podcast starts right now. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Ready, Aim, Shop. Bullseye North is where passion meets precision. Discover a huge selection of top-notch rifles, accessories, and ammo. Whether you're perfecting your aim at the range or gearing up for hunting season, Bullseye North has you covered with free shipping on orders over $300, including ammo. Some exclusions apply. Check out bullseyenorth.com and remember to subscribe to their newsletter, bullseyenorth.com. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. All right, we are back. So I've only got a couple of things I want to cover with you before we bring Tracy on, because when she comes on, we have a ton of stuff to talk about. And of course, we've got an interview coming up with, as I mentioned, with Chris Scott over at the Penticton Shooting Sports Association, a range that's been around since World War I, that's being closed down by the federal government. Why? We don't know. So anyway, we're going to hear all about that with Chris. And then at the end, I will tell you what you can do about it as well. But what I did want to cover with you is we did file all of our application and all the supporting documents for our bid to be heard by the Supreme Court of Canada. That's all done and in progress. And I just want to make sure that I manage expectations. So it is more likely we will not be granted leave to appear in front of the Supreme Court of Canada, because they take only a small percentage of all the cases presented to them. There's a criteria involved there, how they decide what cases to take. But should we get selected, that's great. And we will go to the Supreme Court. And then once we get there, I don't know, is it 50-50 or 60-40 that we will win or lose in that process? I don't hold out a lot of hope, because we do have two decisions from two lower courts, including the Federal Court of Appeal, which are the high achievers as far as the law is concerned in Canada. And we lost there too. But a couple of things I just want to mention. Number one, we have to continue to fight. That's what the CCFR exists for. We don't exist to do podcasts and TV shows and, you know, appear at trade shows or whatever and just fundraise just to be alive. That's not what we're here for. We are here to fight the government by any means that we can, by any means we can. Everything that we can think of, we do it. And so we will fight tooth and nail to hold on to our firearms. Now, just keep this in mind. Other than we have no choice, we can't just give up. Giving up isn't a choice, because that's not what we exist for. The other thing is, every case that was won at the Supreme Court of Canada is a case that was struck down into lower courts before it, right? So provincial or federal court, and then the Federal Court of Appeal, and then they got to the Supreme Court. And then if they won, You know, they were in the exact same position that we are in, right? So anyway, you never know. Maybe we'll get lucky there. But we're not resting on our laurels. We're not pinning all our hopes on the Supreme Court of Canada or even getting in there. We have other things going on. So when Tracy comes on, we're going to talk about what the CCFR strategy is and what we've been working at actually for over a month. Just about, I don't know, a week and a half after the election, we came up with a strategy and we deployed it. And we've been working on it ever since. And I just want to mention there are more projects coming up to support what Tracy and I are going to share with you when she comes on as well. Just keep that in mind in the background kind of thing. The only other thing I wanted to mention is I'll be speaking at a conference in Calgary in September. So this conference is called Reclaiming. There's a lot of big names actually speaking at this conference. So I'm quite honored to be one of the speakers there on the live stage. And the conference is about solutions to our problem. So basically the idea is, what do we want to reclaim from what Canada was before the last decade, right? When it was one of the best countries to live in the world before the decade of decline. So basically, what is it that we want to reclaim and how can we do that? So really important. So I'm there to talk about freedom and responsibility and personal accountability and firearm rights, as it were. And there's a lot of other speakers talking about a lot of other things as well. So really cool. The CCFR is going to have a booth there. It's at the BMO Center in downtown Calgary. So pretty cool, pretty big. But we're going to have a booth there. So stop by if you're in Calgary or you're going to come by for the conference, say hi, have a conversation. It is an entire weekend conference. So I think it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And there's a lot of speakers for 3 days straight. But in addition to that, there's a live stream of a whole sort of online version of that with different speakers and whatever. It's quite a cool thing. So anyway, if you want to find out information about this conference, go to weunify.ca. That's weunify.ca. And there's early bird tickets because it's an all weekend conference. So it can be expensive if you want to go all 3 days. There's early bird ticket deals on the website right now. And hopefully I'll see you there. Okay, that's it for now. Let's find out what Tracy Wilson has on her mind.
Are you ready to fight for your ability to legally own and use firearms in Canada and save hundreds of dollars in hunting and shooting merchandise? Download the CCFR mobile app right now. Keep up with what's going on in the community, watch the CCFR podcast, and get exclusive discounts from dozens of gun stores and other CCFR business members. Download it right now from Google Play, the Apple App Store, or the cancel-proof progressive web app. The CCFR mobile app, free to download right now.
All right, we are back, and via the internet, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Hey, Gil Daca. Nice sweater. I love it.
Why, thank you. This is the 10th anniversary fully embroidered CCFR hoodie that's now available in the merch shop.
I'm doing a Vanna White over here. I've got one too.
Awesome. So these were planned for quite a while. They're for our 10th anniversary, which is coming up, I guess, technically in August.
Yes.
But practically at the end of October. So if you're interested in one of these, they're a little more expensive. They're a little more elaborate, but they are, they're kind of a nice keepsake. So you can find them in the merch shop if you're interested.
Yes, sir. CCFR.ca.
There you go. Click the button that says merch shop and that'll get you there. Okay. So we have a pile of stuff to talk about. You know, you'd think over the summer, people would just be having fun. Parliament's not in session, but man, the news cycle, even just for gun owners, keeps on cranking. So we got a pile of stuff to talk about. We're going to try to rapid fire our way through it. I'm sure it's going to be long anyway, because there's a lot of interesting things going on.
Yeah, that's right. All kinds of weird stuff happening.
All right. Now, I mentioned a couple of things in the intro, but there's something else that we have to address. And I thought we'd address this together, which is important. We have, I'm sure there's a lot of people wondering, like, well, what's the angle for the CCFR right now? What do you want as a lobby organization? And I mm-hmm. thought we would kind of talk about this and kick it around a little bit. Do you want to just start that off?
Yeah, well, I know all along we've told people, you know, we're trying to work within the system that we've got, right? And we were looking for a court solution. And of course, we all know how that's going. It's not going well. But we still have to do it, right? It's important to do it. But we were also looking for a political solution. And 6 or 8 months ago, you know, we would have assumed it was in the bag, right? Unfortunately, that didn't work out, right? Elections have consequences. And of course, now we've got a new prime minister with a fresh mandate. And I don't know if he's as eager as the last one to come and take our stuff. But what I do know is that if confiscations are carried out and some of our guns or all of our guns start getting confiscated and they're gone, no future government, regardless of how friendly they are, regardless of who's leading them, is going to turn the clock all the way back. So the most important thing we can do right now is to keep those firearms legitimately in our hands, in our possession. So, yeah, I've been lobbying a little bit on the Hill. Of course, there was only a couple of weeks between when positions were announced and when the House rose for the summer. But I crammed in a whole bunch of meetings. I right away met with Frank Caputo, Shadow Minister for Public Safety, Connie Cody, Blaine Calkins, Bob Zimmer, Andrew Lawton, Aaron Gunn, Dane Lloyd, and Senator Husakos. Now, I've got meeting requests out to every single member of both SECU and SECD, the public safety committees in the House and Senate. It is summer, so people are at Stampede and on the barbecue circuit and doing pancake breakfast. A lot of those meetings may have to wait for the fall, but I'm reaching out to everybody on every side of the aisle because this is kind of where we're at. So, yeah, the most important thing we can ask for is to prevent the buyback confiscation program from being carried out.
Yeah. So now just to add a little bit of detail to what you said, the idea right now is we just have to look at what options are on the table. And it's really important, as you said, to maintain possession of those firearms, because if the government goes through with the buyback, just to be very clear, and spends $2, $3, $4, $5, $6 billion doing it, that makes it very politically difficult to roll all mm-hmm. that back. And keep in mind, yeah. and you know, I think the Liberal government knows this. This is not the answer to reducing multiple victim public shootings. This is not the answer to the shootings that we see in urban and rural communities across the country every single day. This is not the answer to domestic violence. Like any serious person that spent any time researching this topic whatsoever knows this. And the government knows right. it too. It's just been using it as a political football. Mm-hmm. So right now, the top priority is maintaining ownership of these firearms and then also getting use of these firearms back for licensed gun owners. So our strategy, what we're pushing for and what we've been pushing for since about, I'd say about 8 days after the election.
Yep.
We've been working with everyone that will listen on the Hill and then some, is we're pushing the for the Liberal government to institute grandfathering. So mm-hmm. as a government, they know how to do this. They've done it lots. So what we're asking for specifically, which is important that you guys know, we're asking for the government to grandfather all individuals, issue a special endorsement on the license if they need to. So similar to guys that own short-barreled handguns in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So allow people to use those firearms as they did before the prohibition. So if they were non-restricted, they could use them for hunting or recreational shooting. If they were restricted, they could use them at the range and basically take the same approach as they did with handguns.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know, if you would have told me 3 or 4 years ago that I would be supporting grandfathering, you know, I was always pretty against it. And I mean, down deep, I still am, of course, but I have to be realistic of what situation we're in, what's in front of us and what's possible. So for me, I think it's a good temporary solution. You know, I'd like to see something better down the road, but we're just not in that position, right? The election went the way it did and it is what it is. So, yeah, I think, too, with Carney's announcement that he needs to find billions of dollars in cuts, right? This is a great way to avoid spending billions of taxpayer dollars on something that's totally meaningless and ineffective. And I think it would go a long way to kind of, you know, end some of that divisive Trudeau era policy stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of talk in Ottawa about grandfathering.
So. Right. So we've been suggesting that. Others have been suggesting it too. Sure. But it is very divisive. It's created a lot of anger. There's just no reason for it. It was just all political and ideological from the get-go. And the grandfathering solution, while it's short-term for us, because we'll keep pushing, obviously, that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But For that, as far as the way the Liberal Party looks at that or what Carney might look at, it fits all the criteria that he's looking for. Save money, yeah. Address the real problem, stem division. You know what I mean? Get people working on their lives again and get things back to normal instead of how they were under Trudeau, all the rest of that stuff. So that actually works for them. It'll work for us short term. They're not going to roll back all the prohibitions. They're just not.
No, they're not.
And let me just add this. And it's the podcast, so we're able to add a little bit of extra information. We sent out kind of a fundraising email a little while back, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, we got a lot of really great responses back. But we did get a handful. I don't know, we probably sent out, 80,000 or 90,000 emails. And we got back 10 of them that were quite disparaging. And, you know, it's interesting, the stuff that people write in those emails, basically what they're saying to us is, you didn't get the guns back, the Liberals won, you didn't get the election result you wanted. So yeah, you guys just give up, basically. I'm not going to support you. You know, you didn't win the election, so just give up. And different ways of wording it, but I'm just like, that's so interesting because these are hardcore gun owners, obviously. Guns mean as much to them as they mean to you and me personally, I think.
Right. Yes.
And then they're like, okay, well, that didn't work, so just don't do anything.
Well, that's, I mean, trust me, I don't know if I can put into words, and I'm going to be brief here, but I knew the night before the election that it was what the result was. I already knew that because I do believe polling because I believed it when it was positive, right? And yeah, it took quite a bit to kind of crawl out of that dark hole that I felt like I fell in. But at the same time, so what, do nothing? Like doing nothing isn't an option. Is this ideal? Is this where we thought we would be? No, but we have to work within the political system and the legal system that we've got. And this is a solution that would cost them nothing, basically. And yeah, I know a lot of people will probably even have things to say about this conversation right here. And they can say whatever they want. But I made a promise to gun owners, and so did you, that we would do whatever we can with what we've got. And this is what we've got. So I think it's more important to keep people's property in their ownership, in their possession, until we can get a better result. And that's where we're at.
Yeah. So if we can achieve grandfathering, from the Liberals, that is that's a victory, a very short term one, but that's a victory in itself. So I'm hoping that we can make that happen. And we actually have a couple of projects and some things that we're going to do to help that happen. So
yes, we're working on that very hard.
Yes. So anyway, just wanted to have a chat about that. It's really a reality check. You know,
it is.
Yeah. What do we have in, you know, what cards do we have in our hand? Right. So, okay. So we just recently had our online annual general meeting, and I just thought you could just spread the word about some new directors positions that happened.
Yeah, that's right. So each year, half of our board of directors seats come up for election, and that way you get some fresh faces, but you also get some experience from previous directors. So the results are in, and British Columbia has a double Scott situation. They've got both Scott Carpenter and Scott Bell representing them, so they're well represented. Alberta, Alberta has two directors, but for the last year, we've only had one, and that was Gord Sturgey. So he's back again, but he is joined this time by brand new director, Colin Zveniga. I hope I'm not saying that wrong. I will find out, but I think I've got that right. Saskatchewan actually sits empty. Nobody stepped forward, but I do want to say farewell to Matt Shirley. He was a longtime Saskatchewan director. He's moved out of province. So we'll see if somebody steps forward next year. Manitoba has another term with Mark Michi. So that's great. Ontario, there's a little bit of a mix up as well. Kelly Wheaton stays on for another year. Kelly Kincaid ran in an election against two other candidates, and Kyle Worsley came out on top on that one. Quebec, Sophie Bellon stays on for another year, and Jason Warren joins her as a new director for Quebec. And of course, we've got Jason Gallen out in the Maritimes, carrying the weight of the entire East on his shoulders. So that is your 2026 CCFR Board of Directors.
Yeah, awesome. Now, we also at the AGM announced a kind of a new award, just because our volunteers are so valuable to us, obviously. And we're always trying to, I remember in the early days, sorry to get sidetracked, but in the early days, I had a couple of people, had volunteers of ours saying, you know, you should do more for volunteers. And I'm like, man, I can barely hold everything that we have together, because we used to be mostly volunteer, and that caused a lot of people to be running around like chickens with their heads cut off all the time. So we ended up getting around to creating all of these things, because you have to create them and get, you know, a policy in place, and, you know, there's a lot of follow up and whatever, right? So we ended up with Field Officer of the Month, which is great. But we created Field Officer of the Year, because some people do such a ridiculous amount of work and use their own personal resources to such a degree, it's hard to even get your head around it. Certainly for us, it's difficult to watch that and go like, man, this guy puts in a lot of time of his own time, of his or her own time, right? So anyway, Field Officer of the Year, did you want to announce that, Ms. Wilson?
Yeah, well, I think the cat's out of the bag already, because I've seen it splashed all over social media, but it is the one and only Greg Weiss, literally my right-hand guy here in Ontario. So Greg's been with us since the very beginning, and he's got so many irons and so many fires. You know, he basically runs all the biggest trade shows here that we do in Ontario, like Toronto Sportsman Show, TACOM. He runs the RSO stuff. He's the Ontario Provincial Coordinator. He's also a shoot boss with Maple Seed. He literally uses his own equipment to haul all our gear to trade shows. He works every single range event within like a 10-hour drive. Like, the guy is a total machine. He's never said no. I think even the other day you called me to blast me out, because it's just Greg doing so many things, right? And it's like, this guy is just, he just really believes in it, and he's super humble. So he probably does not want these accolades at all, but that's too bad. As usual, I'm a bully and he's getting them. So yeah. So Greg Weiss is just amazing, and I can't say enough good about him, and I'm so grateful for him. And he also carries my weight at the golf tournament we'll be going to this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. Golf.
Yeah. Greg's awesome. Awesome.
Greg is awesome.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that we couldn't do if we didn't have Greg.
Yeah. So like, yeah, I can legitimately say that. I don't think we'd be where we are without him, for sure.
Absolutely. Well deserved. Okay, so we might as well talk about Field Officer of the Month for June 2025. The last, we thought it was June from the last podcast, the last recipient, but it wasn't. It was for May 2025. So the winner of Field Officer of the Month for June 2025 is Becca Newman, who's a fairly new field officer to us. And I think you've got a quote from Mark LaFond.
Yeah. So I haven't actually met her yet. I'm really excited to meet her. So hopefully soon, maybe at the Lower Trent Ladies Day, but she's fresh on the scene, and she's already worked a load of events with Ontario's own superstar, Mark LaFond. So I am just super excited to meet her. I cannot wait. And yeah, she's killing it. She's out there doing tons of events. So thank you, Becca.
Yes, thank you very much. And in case Becca doesn't know what she gets for being Field Officer of the Month, she gets a year's free subscription to Canadian Access to Firearms, donated every month by Donovan Dewis over there at CATF. She gets, I think, a picture posted in CATF in the paper as well.
Oh, yeah. You get a spread. That's awesome.
Your favorite part gets a $100 promo code for the CCFR online store. As well, she gets, of course, mentioned here in the podcast and on our television show, CCFR Radio on the Air on Wild TV.
Yes, and our undying love and thanks. So thank you, Becca.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So we wanted to talk a little about a kind of a growing trend here in Canada. Interesting things going on. As we know, crime is through the roof. The Liberals have spent hundreds of millions chasing licensed gun owners around to no avail. And then at the same time, firearm-related violence and violence in general has gone through the roof, including home invasions. And that's kind of a new thing in Canada. It's happened before, but not with the frequency that happens now, but home invasions. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of news, and it's all sort of coming around to talking about a very important topic, something that is very important to the CCFR, which is, I guess I'll just let the cat out of the bag early and just say it's self-defense. Canadians seem to be waking up and understanding that it is a human right, an inalienable right that cannot be withheld. If you're if you're any kind of life form that is, you know, sentient, like, you have a right to fight for your life no matter what. So you have a lot of Canadians after decades, probably 40 to 50 years of gaslighting and severe propaganda, trying to convince them to reject the idea that if someone is trying to assault you or kill you or even take your things, that it is inappropriate for you to resist that. So anyway, as usually I would save that for the end, but this is sort of the opener. So there's a number of different things that have happened over the last couple of weeks. I just wanted to touch on them. So the first thing was there was a guy in Vaughan, Ontario, who was looking like he was going to have his car stolen, and he fired a warning shot. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, this is an interesting story. So there was some video of this, and sure enough, some guys were out stealing cars. High-end cars get stolen a lot. It's a big problem in Canada. And of course, they get shipped overseas. And he fired a warning shot. And of course, everyone started talking about this, from law enforcement to Doug Ford. Like, everybody was talking about it. I'm not 100% sure if he was a licensed gun owner or not. You know, there's some questions about somebody living in a rental but owning a Lamborghini. I don't know the details, but yeah, he definitely fired a warning shot. So, yep.
Yeah, so he's got firearm-related charges. They caught, I think, some of the people that were doing it. But here's the thing. He did discharge a firearm in a residential neighborhood. And that's he's certainly facing charges for that. But, you know, here's the interesting part. He still has his car.
He does. Yes.
So he was able to do what the system has been helpless in doing.
Yeah. And I know Doug Ford went on the crazy rant at a press conference. Somebody asked him about it, and he was like, give me that guy's name and number. Let's do a fundraiser for him. We need castle law like in the US. And it's just wild. Now, I'm not singing Doug Ford's praises by all means, but it's just wild how, if we would have talked like this 3 or even 4 years ago, people were calling us extremists. And now it's a totally mainstream conversation because everything is so out of control and so violent that even normies are talking about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's actually an important point. It's every conversation in, you know, in the social or political sphere, has timing has a lot to do with change, right? So if you're ringing the alarm, you're screaming from the tower about an invasion, and there's two guys out there, you're just not going to get the attention, and people are going to be like, you know, we don't need you to pull the fire alarm, you know, if somebody's burning toast. People have to experience it for there to be that change of attitude in the public. Then when you sense that happening, when you see it happening, you can say, okay, so now that you guys are listening, now that you got your listening ears on, there's some things you may want to think about a little bit and look at, you know, the inadequacies of our systems to protect you, and the malevolence in our system to pursue you as the victim the minute you resist, you know, criminal behavior that's perpetrated against you, right? So now is the time for that conversation, and now people are listening. So pretty important. So as far as Doug Ford is concerned, it's kind of an interesting departure from the political kind of biases that he's had lately to say something like that. I don't know what that was all about. And the only, so I'm just going to leave that there. But I agree with his message 100%, obviously. And we do as an organization, we have a policy on the website about self-defense with firearms, actually. But the only other thing I would mention is sometimes we don't run in on certain stories. There are some indications that this guy may not be a legal gun owner. And for me, maybe I'll just speak for myself. I'm not hitching my wagon to anyone, no matter how justified they are, if they were doing something while involved in any kind of other criminal enterprise. So if this was a licensed gun owner, no criminal record, completely compliant or whatever, then I am on side with you. We would, you know, endorse your whatever, right? Your defense or what have you. We'd be there to support you as best we can based on the organization we are. But yeah, if there's any other circumstances there, it's just, that's not what we're about.
Well, I've got this other story here out of Etobicoke, and this guy is a licensed gun owner. So I don't know if you heard about it, the home invasion. There's video of this one too, and it's pretty wild. It's actually, it's almost hard for me to watch because that feeling of having thugs in my house feels so invasive. But basically four thugs, you know, their hoods on and their faces covered. They were armed with hammers. They break into this beautiful suburban home, 4:30 in the morning. They're inside. The husband and wife and their 11-year-old kid are in there sleeping. And they have surveillance video on the outside and on the inside. So you can see them running through the kitchen. They make their way to the bedroom. And the husband had the wherewithal to get up, and he, you know, was able to grab his shotgun. It was unloaded. It was stored legally and unloaded. Grab his shotgun and I guess just sort of brandish it. And they saw that, these four thugs with their hammers saw that, and they hightailed it out the door. So, you know, the homeowners were left terrified and with a broken patio door, because they just took their hammers, smashed the patio door and walked right in to the house, right? But anyways, the wife, there's this thing called Speaker's Corner in Toronto where you can call and you can, you know, if there's something on your mind, you can kind of say what your beef is or whatever. It's been going on for decades. And she called and told this story. And she said at the end of it, you know, thank God for the gun. Thank God for the shotgun. Because even though it was unloaded, I mean, if they would have called his bluff, it might have been a really bad day for him. But it wasn't. It was a good day for the whole family because they made it out safely and nothing was taken. And the thugs were chased out the door. So,
yeah,
I just can't imagine what the terror that would feel.
Well, it would have been a lot different because there was, if you like, just some quick play by play. I just want to make a couple of points. The first one is, if you'll notice, there was three guys heading into the bedroom. One guy peeled off and was looking in the garage or whatever he was doing. But there's three guys. One had a crowbar. And I think one I saw a hammer for sure. And then the third guy maybe had something. Going into the bedroom, masked.
Yeah, what do you think they were going to do in there?
Yeah, like, oh, what are they going to start having a conversation? And and then all of a sudden, all three of them, gone like a shot. And the fourth guy trailing behind too, gone like a shot, all three of them. What part do people don't understand about that? What part is escaping them? You even had a gun that wasn't even loaded. You didn't even have to fire a shot. That could have, that, you know, that just the brandishing of that, for just the sight of that firearm that basically displays, I'm not the victim that you think I am. In fact, you're probably into this up to your eyeballs. And all of a sudden they turn around and they start running. Maybe that, maybe that unloaded firearm saved their lives. We don't know. Because you don't know why
you can't prove a negative, right? You can't prove something that didn't happen. But surely they were not going into this family's bedroom at 4:30 in the morning with their faces covered, hoods over their heads, and weapons in their hands to play cards.
Yeah, or like, to have a negotiation about, you know, what they want to take with them.
No, like, they were going to do horrible things to these people.
This is, you know, we argue with people. We have our political adversaries. We argue with them often. Me, not so much, because I'm just tired of dealing with people who can't see, you know, objective reality for themselves, a reality that's in front of their faces. But man, that's you know, even if you had a gun for self-defense purposes, which of course the bureaucracy says is not an appropriate reason to own a firearm, even though the law contradicts that in the Firearms Act, says references protection of life for firearms three different times in the Firearms Act. Even if you're getting, like, you cannot refute what you just saw. And not a shot was fired. Not a shot was fired and no one was hurt. Why? Because the homeowner had a shotgun. And a similar thing happened in Nova Scotia during the largest spree shooting in the history of the country.
That's right. Right.
The only people that were left alive after having an interaction with that, with the shooter, were the people who were gun owners and who yelled out when the perpetrator was outside the house, "I've got a gun and basically I'm going to shoot you with it if you come in." And few, you know, did the mainstream media run with that story? No, they did not.
But it was a very small blip. Nobody wanted to talk about that, you know?
That's right. Because I was part of that inquiry.
Yeah.
Right? I had status in that inquiry. So just anyway, interesting. So there was also another story about some, it was basically a school shooting. Some kid takes a loaded illegal handgun in his waistband to school and ends up shooting someone he thought was going to stab him.
Yeah, this is a weird story. So the guy's in his 20s now, but when he was 17, he was in a kerfuffle at school with an 18-year-old, another kid, an 18-year-old. Now, he ended up shooting that 18-year-old in defense, and part of his defense was he claimed he was carrying this illegal loaded firearm because his neighborhood in Scarborough was so violent that it reminded him of growing up in Iraq, and that's where he came from, and he felt unsafe. Now, that's not the entirety of his defense. There was also some other information that the 18-year-old was armed with a knife and lunged at him, and, you know, so yeah, I guess he was in a self-defense position. However, he was doing it while carrying an illegal loaded firearm, and he was acquitted. He was acquitted on all charges.
Carried so, at school.
At school.
At school.
Yeah.
High school. Yeah. So, yeah. So there's a couple of, there's two separate things there, right? There's the act of self-defense and then there's the firearm thing. So basically he was acquitted of defending himself, of murder, basically, because he was truly defending himself. And there's been other cases about that too. I mean, obviously we're not going to break into a really long legal conversation, but there was even a case in Ontario where a guy shot two police officers. I believe he killed them because they had busted into his house, did not identify them, and then ended up in a gunfight with this guy. And he was able to kill both these guys, and he was not guilty of murder because they didn't identify themselves. So you can, as I've said a million times, you can defend yourself with a firearm in Canada, but you can't, it has to be a weapon of opportunity. You're not allowed to carry a firearm for the purpose of self-defense unless you are licensed. And I think there's like two CCWs, well, authorizations to carry in Canada, I think, for self-defense in the whole country. So it never happens. But anyway, there's still charges outstanding, I believe, all the firearm-related charges. But it's interesting how it's like, yeah, you can defend yourself with a pipe wrench or a firearm, whichever seems to be handy at the time. But the firearm's more complicated because there's a lot of regulation around the actual firearm where there's not so much regulation around pipe wrenches. So it's an interesting story for sure.
Yeah, just, all these different situations. I mean, they're all, you know, they're all different. But this is what I mean when I say that things lately, the way things are going, the conversation around self-defense or defending your life is becoming more and more mainstream. And that's not a good thing. Like I would prefer safe for Canada, obviously, but we, again, this is a reality check and this is where we're at, right?
Yeah.
This is the way the country is going.
Well, I think the conversation is a good thing. How we got there is certainly bad, I'd agree.
That's right.
All right, let's move on because we've been at it for a little while already. We've got a couple more things to talk about. So the Danforth Families for Safer Communities, their anti-gun group, had tried to get a class action lawsuit going against Smith & Wesson, saying that the reason basically that the shooting on the Danforth that happened in, I think it was 2018, happened because Smith & Wesson didn't implement smart gun trigger technology when they have some kind of working prototype or whatever. Completely frivolous and vexatious and ridiculous and juvenile, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because I've really thought it through before I would even say those things. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But
so this was a crime that was committed by an unlicensed criminal with an illegal, stolen, gang-sourced firearm. And I feel like they're literally blaming anyone except the guy who did it, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. It turns out that they can proceed with their class action lawsuit against Smith & Wesson after Ontario's top court overturned a ruling that dismissed their original motion. So, yeah, it looks like they're going ahead. I don't think this will actually go anywhere. And in fact, reading on a little more about it, it was basically they overturned the decision because they would have had to basically prove their entire case just with their application. So that's why it was kind of overturned. I don't actually expect the lawsuit to go anywhere. But the fact that the court is even entertaining this nonsense is disappointing. But in any event.
Well, it'll be interesting, right? Because the reason why you don't have smart technology on guns is because guns are a life-saving device. And you can't take the chance of that gun not working.
Yeah.
And sometimes you may have to use a gun that's not yours.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes. Just, I don't know. It's so ridiculous. But again, you know, it is what it is. This is what they do. And, you know, there was we never mentioned it, but in a future episode, because I think we bumped it from the last episode because we had too much stuff to talk about, much like this one. But there was a whole bunch of information uncovered about the Danforth shooting. It was a terror attack.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there was some interesting stuff there.
Yeah. And we're going to, I want to do a whole story on that, including a specific interview with somebody, but we'll see. We'll have to wait till a future podcast for that when I get some more time. Next thing. So speaking of Mark Carney and the Liberals, they've maybe come to the conclusion that the Bill C-5 and C-75 maybe caused this humongous, massive, destructive crime wave in Canada. And they're looking at some bail reform. So they have a bail reform bill coming apparently in the fall.
Yeah, the Liberal government will table a bill this fall introducing stricter bail conditions and sentencing for some very serious crimes, particularly those involving organized crime, human trafficking, home invasion, and car theft. And this comes from Justice Minister Sean Fraser. So no idea what that bill will look like yet, but I think, I think they've just had a really bad time with C-5 and C-75. If they introduce something new without repealing the parts of those other bills, though, I don't know if that's going to work. So we'll see. But we support efforts to reduce crime, violence, and gun smuggling all the time.
Absolutely. A quick little story. I mean, it could be very significant in the future, but Alberta is considering creating a provincial firearms license.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into the nuts and bolts of this just until it gets a little bit further down the way, till it develops a little further, I think is what I'm trying to say. So interesting idea. A lot of reasons why it might not work. There's some reasons why it may work, but it may save gun owners in Alberta, might save their firearms and allow them to use them again. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's literally what Danielle Smith said she was looking at.
Yeah.
Is that they would be able to keep, use, and own, keep, and use in the province of Alberta the firearms that they own that were banned. So
yeah. Which is only makes sense. So that's what happens when you have a provincial government that actually is interested in doing the right thing for you as a resident of that province. The other provinces that aren't taking action on this, you just understand exactly where you stand there, like British Columbia, for instance.
Yeah, or Ontario.
Yeah. And then the last thing, I just thought I'd mention this because it's kind of funny. I've done a couple of interviews, one just a few days ago, about a week ago, about speaking of British Columbia being a joke, is the city council of the city of Vancouver has been really working, really putting their back into it, really working on public safety. They've got a bylaw where they are going to ban gun-shaped lighters in the city of Vancouver. Yeah.
That should do it.
Yep. This has been going on for a while because I think it was like, I don't know, 4 months ago when I did that first interview. And then I get contacted again by maybe Global or whatever to do this interview. And I'm like, is this still going? Like, has nobody gotten in the chambers and said, like, what are you guys doing? Take a walk around Vancouver. It's like literally zombie apocalypse hellscape. You know, you can buy heroin from a vending machine there. You know, like the taxpayer actually has to pay for addicts for their heroin so that they don't have to pay for the heroin. Like just, and the fentanyl and all the rest of this stuff, right? And I'm like, and gun-shaped lighters?
Mm-hmm. It's a priority.
It's hard for me to, I actually had to write down a bunch of things for that interview, right? Like to say, because
I would have to too. Like,
it's making me lightheaded.
Yeah. I would think somebody was playing a joke on me. Yeah. Like if I got an interview request for that, I'd be like, come on. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's not, no, really, it's a real thing.
Yeah. Insane. Anyway, that's a state. I mean, you know, it's wild how disconnected people get, completely disconnected from reality. Hey, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. I think we covered everything. It's been a little while. So, thanks for the update. And I guess we'll see you next time.
All right. We will see you then.
All right. We're back. And in the studio, we have Chris Scott, who's the president of the Penticton Shooting Sports Association. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Rod. Good to be here.
All right. Well, I wish we were here under better circumstances, but you're here to tell us a little bit about your shooting club in Penticton. And apparently the federal government wants to end your club.
Right. So we got a notice that the federal government is divesting the land that we're located on. And they've told us that at the end of 2025, we need to be gone.
Now, your club's been around a long time. I think you're not sure, but maybe it was established around World War I. You've had to move off of land before that was government lease, but the government lease land that you're on now, you've been for over 40 years.
Yeah, 42 years. Yeah, 1982, 83, we moved to the location that we're at now.
And that's under the Department of Agriculture or the Ministry of Agriculture. There's an agricultural research station there, and then you have the sort of the most distant two parcels.
Yes, I think, that's on that right. Land. The southernmost two pieces of land.
Yeah. And that made a lot of sense to build a club there because there's all kinds of geological issues as well, I think.
Right? The land wasn't suitable for many other uses. It's not. It's in the red zone, and it's got sinkholes. It's like clay bank from the Okanagan Lake. So it really isn't useful for any other type of activities.
So you, well, not you, I guess. This was before your time, but the members, when they relocated there, they put a lot of their own resources and time and effort and money and building just a fantastic club there. What are like the some of the facilities that you have there?
Yeah, we have a big clubhouse that has a large indoor pistol range and a large open clubhouse on top of it for banquets. We do PAL courses and hunter core courses up there a lot. So, yeah.
So like most gun clubs, it's a community hub.
It is.
We have events and
you bet.
Cadets and all kinds of different stuff. And of course, PAL courses. Yep. And
cadets, scouts, we have range day. We bring we've got a real focus on families and kids, teaching kids gun safety so that we take that curiosity out of it so that they understand, they know how to be safe so that we don't have any unfortunate accidents. We can avoid that kind of thing.
Yeah, all important work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as the story goes, at some point you got correspondence from the government that said they were going to divest that land. How did that all kind of shake out?
Yeah, in 2023, we got a notice from the Agricultural Research Station that said that our parcel had been looked at and that they deemed that they didn't need it in their portfolio and that they were going to divest the land and that they would get back to us. And then they got back to us after a bit of coercing, and they told us, well, it typically takes about 10 years. And then a few months after that, they told us, end of 2025, you guys need to be gone. Take all your stuff.
When they said that, it was like probably a year later, they're saying, this is the end of 2025.
Well, I mean, 2023 into 2023 is when it all started. So it's only been a year and a half, a year and a half.
And that's it. Just move your buildings off or whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But when you've got nowhere to move them to, I mean, you can't really take anything with you, right?
Yeah, of course.
So all that hard work by our members and, you know, all the money that was put into it, it would literally cost a few million dollars to replicate what we have.
Yeah, which, of course, nonprofit clubs don't have.
Right. Well, we've always had fair-priced memberships, and we've offered our facility to all of the agencies for extremely reasonable range prices, right?
And many of them
we weren't looking to make money.
Up on it. Too, right?
All the agencies have trained at our facility over the years.
Yeah, and you did get a letter or two from the RCMP in support.
Yes.
Appealing and, to the federal government, like, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah, the local RCMP, the federal RCMP out of Kelowna, and the Sheriff's Association have all written us letters of support stating that our club is integral to what they do for their training and their qualifications. And so if they lose the ability to use our club, it's going to be detrimental to them.
And expensive to the taxpayer because it's going to cost them more. To
send people
train, to travel, to train right. and to do qualifications. Right. What has the, what is the club, like what steps have you taken to try to push back against this?
So one of our members started a petition, a House of Commons petition that was sponsored by Dan Albus, and it's out right now. It's a 90-day petition, and we're probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25 days into it now. So people can go and sign that petition, and we've got the support of our local MPs. All of the MPs that surround us are in support of us continuing. And beyond that, we've hired legal counsel, and we're just trying to see if we can save our club.
You wonder why, especially for a piece of land that doesn't have a lot of appropriate use, that you can't really use it for much, why they would choose to do something like this when they're actually getting, you may not be getting a pile of money for the lease payment, but they're actually receiving some revenue for it, for land that really wouldn't be that useful to anyone
right.
besides.
Right. And such a loss for the community, and it's just going to end up costing taxpayers. And it's just the typical, you look at it and you wonder where the logic is. And yeah, there is none.
Well, and I would wonder who exactly has made that decision and who exactly is pushing that and why. But
Why would you want to take away a community resource like yeah. that? It makes no sense.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out someday. But in the interim, obviously, we want people to sign that petition. It doesn't take anything to sign it. That is petition E6572. So if you go to the House of Commons, look for petitions, you can actually search that out. But if you go to Penticton Shooting Sports Association.com, that's your website of your club. You can go there. There's a little link that says Save Our Club. You can read the whole story about, you know, what happened, start to finish. And you can, there's a link to the petition there. And another thing that that you guys would like people to do is to send a letter to their federal MP, no matter where you live, in support of that club and reject the idea of this attack on our community, on the local community, actually, in Penticton.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something we can all do. Okay, well, awesome. We're out of time, but I really appreciate you coming in to tell us the story, and we'll check back soon and see what's happening.
Thanks for having me on, Rod.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 192 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Please share the podcast, get other people involved, because we're not finished fighting yet, right? As long as we have possession of our firearms, the buyback has not been rolled out. The fight is not over. And I'll tell you this, we are, and this is, I know this sounds weird, but we are closer to the finish line right now, either way that it turns out, than we have ever been. Every day that passes, we're closer to the finish line. We don't know where that finish line is, but this government could last 18 months. It could last 2 years. There's polling that came out just today when I'm recording this, that the conservatives are back up in the polls. It's just weird. Maybe the NDP, a party which has let the liberals basically destroy them. They're like no party status almost, right? No party status. Like they let the liberals destroy them. Maybe they grow a spine and they're like, you know what? No more of this crap. No confidence. That's all it would take to end this government. So, you know, I don't like the situation any more than you do. Believe me, after the work that I've put in and Wilson, everyone else at the CCFR and all the gun owners across the country, all the work to be where we are right now, yeah, it's tough. But you can either brush yourself off and keep going or just be like the people that send me messages. Well, you know what? We failed. You know, that's it. I'm going to bury my guns or, you know, whatever. I'm going to sell my guns and take up golf or whatever the stupid messages that I get. It's like, well, you can do that if you want, but I still have my stuff and I still don't want to give it up. So there's still a fight to be had and I'm going to continue to fight it because I can't not fight it. So anyway. So if you want to help, of course, as long as you guys are there with us, we'll keep fighting. So if you want to become a member, great. If you want to donate, great. If you want to make a small recurring donation, that's actually the most ideal thing to do, because we end up with predictable revenue rather than these big peaks and these big valleys. It's hard to run a business like that if you're a business person, right? To manage cash, right? But anyway, as long as you guys are helping out, we will continue to fight. That's that. Again, just want to thank Chris Scott for coming out from Penticton and telling us about that. If you want to help try to save the Penticton Shooting Sports Association, you can go to PentictonShootingSports.com and read Save Our Club. Down at the bottom, there's a link to the petition E6572. Sign the petition. It costs you nothing to do it. Get everyone in your house to sign it. It costs you nothing to do that. You know, it's funny, guys resist signing petitions like, whoa, this doesn't do anything. It's like, are we asking you for money? Like, just, so, can you imagine if it helped and people didn't want to sign it? So just take that 5 minutes, man. That's what it takes. It takes 5 minutes. So please get on there, sign the petition, give the club every chance they have. If you are in British Columbia, talk to your MLA, your provincial member of the Legislative Assembly is what that stands for. Talk to them about the club and how just so wrong this is, and ask them to reach out to the Liberal government, the federal government. If you, and no matter where you are in Canada, talk to your MP. That's a federal politician, and this is, it's the federal government that's taking the club from them. So talk to your MP, especially if it's a Liberal, and just say, hey man, this is absolutely unacceptable what they're doing. Unacceptable at any level. Why are you doing this? Really light a fire under, they put, hold their feet to the fire. You know, really get them to do something. It's really important, right? That stuff is just, that's evil government stuff, and it has to be opposed. All right, so last but not least, again, if you want to make your way to, I think it's the in the second half of September, this September, to Calgary, to the BMO Center for this for the Reclaiming Conference. It's going to be a really interesting weekend with lots of really cool speakers there. So anyway, and if you want to visit with the CCFR and maybe have a handshake and a chat while I'm there, I'd love to do that. You can get early bird tickets now at weunify.ca. So check that out, weunify.ca. Anyway, that's everything I have on the agenda. Thanks everyone for watching. Really appreciate it. Take care, and we'll see you in about a month.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.